Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. My guests today are sexual energy experts, Drs. Rob and Janelle Alex, both PhDs. They are mentoring couples around the world, and they're best-selling authors and speakers and hosts of a top-rated Mission Date Night podcast. Today, we have them, and we're going to talk about some of their favorite subjects. Welcome to the program, Rob and Janelle.
Thank you. We're excited to be here.
Yeah, it is a pleasure to be on here with you.
Oh, thank you so much. So I wanted to, something very intriguing for me, your dissertation for your PhD, I love the title, and I would love for you to expand on it just a little bit, Rob. Orgasmic Laughter, : Sex and Humor Are Unexpected Portals to the Universe. Before we get into our subjects for the program today, Sexy Secrets Behind Business and Merging Sexuality and Spirituality, could you expand a bit on your dissertation? And I just love the title. It's very provocative.
Oh, you know what? I do too. I always go, darn it, why didn't I think of doing that? Now, we'll listen to Rob.
Well, the two of the greatest joys of my life, you know, as far as physical or emotional or passionate things, are an orgasm. And when I get that really great laughter going, I'm a funny guy. I love humor. You know, mm-hmm. Nothing lights me up like to see a good funny movie that just makes me laugh. I mean, as a kid, I used to watch the Three Stooges all the time, and I would get in trouble for waking my parents up because they'd be on really early in the morning. And I started thinking, these two items are very similar. When
yeah.
you are deep in laughter and that uncontrollable laughter, and when you're having that orgasm, it's like you leave your body. It's like in my opinion, you actually go someplace else. You are experiencing either past lives, concurrent lives, as I believe, but you're able to tap into these things. And I thought, why are these two items connected? And I just think that they're just so blissful, and they're those gifts from the gods, as I would put it, for us to enjoy here on Earth, because they're very pleasurable. Just yesterday, I fell down in our kitchen, and the laughter that ensued, I was trying to be a little silly, and I was in my socks, and I slipped and I fell, and Janelle and I laughed. I bet we laughed for a good 10 minutes.
Our stomachs hurt. We laughed
yeah,
so hard.
And I was like,
wow, crying.
How amazing was that? And I mean, it was literally like the best ab workout I've had in a long time, because
sure.
I laughed so much. And I was like, and you know, with that, it's just those two items are so powerful. You know, there's another one that comes in that could possibly be similar, but I don't like to bring it in, but it's the pain that you experience sometimes, that pain that just kind of zaps you out. You know, that one's not as fun as the other two. So, but I truly believe that when we have an orgasm and when we do that, when we have that gut-wrenching laughter that just kind of takes us away, that we tap into that metaphysical principles, that spiritual dimension, and it allows us to just enjoy the pure pleasures of life.
Well, and to the simplest form, good laughter is downright sexy.
Yeah, it is.
Sure, and couples who laugh together laugh together. You know, there may be, besides the spiritual aspect, there may be a physiological aspect, and the immune system is boosted by raising levels of endorphins when you're laughing. And it turns out that the receptors for endorphins in the brain are also found in white blood cells. So this means that when you have stimulated white blood cell activity, which is crucial for fighting off infections and other diseases. So I think there's that physiological part of laughing, and in your case of falling on the kitchen floor, maybe even laughing at yourself, your silliness.
Yeah, I mean, and that's so true because those feel-good hormones are released in the body. So there are the biological, physical aspects that do come into play. And, of course, orgasm is also obviously a very huge, wonderful stress reliever. And, all those amazing similar hormones are released. So, yes, those things are so profound. There's such amazing correlations between orgasm and laughter. And I know I was like, wow, that's such a fascinating topic when he came up with that. And I had the honor of editing it, so I got to go through it all. It was so amazing. And laughter sometimes can be used in a negative way. Rob did get into that as well. And so that's, hey, that stuff can happen. And we don't want that. We want the beautiful, positive laughter. And it affects us emotionally, mentally, spiritually, as well as physically.
Well, and there's always that old cliche that laughter is the best medicine. It truly is.
Yes, the Zuni Indian culture, in that culture, clowns are considered healers right along with medicine men and women. Wow. And so if you come down with an illness, no matter what, you can choose to be treated by a clown. I think that's fascinating.
Well, there's even the laughter yoga that's out there now.
That's right.
There's no way you can watch one of those videos of the people participating in that and not laughing or at least smiling and feeling that laughter yourself.
Mm-hmm. So true.
You know that the word silly did not originally mean ridiculous or trivial. It comes from the Old English saleg, which meant blessed, prosperous, happy, and healthy. And sometimes silliness is a way to feel all four things. So yeah. To feel right. Blessed and prosperous and happy and healthy, if you can be silly, and if you can be silly with your partner, that means you trust them a lot, and right?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, we just had this discussion the other day. Usually Rob is the sillier one. Unfortunately, I fall into being more serious than he does. But I don't even remember what I was doing. We were in our kitchen, and I was being goofy. I was being silly. And I just looked at him, and I said, oh, my gosh, I'm being such a dork right now. And he said, and you are doing a really good job of it. But we had such a good laugh over it, and I said, well, I always try to do the best at everything I do, so I'll try to be a really good dork.
Exactly. Well, you were taking, in that moment, you were taking your relationship a little more lightheartedly, and I suspect you do that a fair amount, and I think that's extremely healthy to be self-effacing.
Yeah, I think it is. It's just huge to us, yeah.
Well, and we often tell couples to bring the laughter into the bedroom. We tell them to try those Kama Sutra positions that seem impossible. Just try to get into one of those without laughing, and be okay with it. It's funny. And bring that laughter in, and oh, my gosh, what foreplay that is to just be laughing together.
It's so true. And I have found as in my clinical work that couples who have a similar sense of humor, it's very much a part of their compatibility. And if they can laugh at the same things and make fun of themselves and sometimes in a good-natured way, fun of the other.
Right. Like when I laughed at him for falling down and wiping out and landing in the dog bowl. But he was laughing too, so.
Sure.
Yeah, because it's not about laughing at. It's laughing with, right?
Exactly. So I should tell our listening audience that there's so much to cover that we're going to do a part two with Rob, Doctors Rob and Janelle, and that'll be March the 15th. And their website is missiondatenight.com. And why don't you tell us about the website a little bit, and then we'll get into sexy secrets behind business, but your website and your book. Tell us about that.
Well, Mission Date Night, of course, there we have, just a lot of great stuff. We care. That's so lame, but we care. That is so, like, well, doesn't everyone say that? But you know, we have the blog, and of course, we have the podcast, and how you can work with us, and you know, we have the Mission Date Night Adventures, and we share some of those there. And then, of course, we do have the new sexy challenges. Because we have a series of sexy challenges that are out there, which are basically sacred and sensual scenarios or experiences for lovers. And the new book that we just put together is the most recent 33 sexy challenges. So it's Sexy Challenges 33 Adventures. And they really, all of those, the majority of those, do have a metaphysical feel. It's, we kind of laugh and say it's the sexual law of attraction. It's an amazing way to manifest amazing things into your life. So there's some really cool experiences. And we're always trying to be so open-minded in the way that we approach it. So there's not a, hey, this is the only way that you have to do everything when it's in regards to your relationship or your sex life.
Well, and one of the big things is we want to bring excitement back to relationships. You know, Mission Date Night, it, target market is those couples that have been in a relationship for a while, and they're finding this plot where, you know, we don't do anything fun anymore. And it's silly because they know each other better now than they did when they were first dating. They should be able to go out and do these silly things. And sometimes they just need to get the ball rolling. And that's what we like to help. We like to help them get that, you know, excitement back and be silly with each other and do it on their date nights or do it in their bedroom. And it's just amazing when it happens because you can see the sparkles come back to their eyes towards each other.
Well, yes, on date night. Mm-hmm. I just want to say there, too, it's kind of like James Bond meets Austin Powers.
Oh, that's great.
So there's a sexy feel in that sense, but there's the hilarity of the character that Mike Myers portrayed.
Yes. Well, I often ask the question in a first session, and my private practice is very full, so I see lots and lots of people, and over the almost 35 years I've been doing this work, I've seen thousands and thousands of people, individuals, but mostly couples. And so sometimes in the first session, I'll ask, when was the last time you two had any fun? And they look at each other. And then I emphasize that ideally, sex is play, and sex toys are adult toys. And, you know, and this is the best way to play. And many of the couples I've seen and do see are not interested in any more children, or they're menopausal. So it's not about procreation. It's about recreation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Well, I have to just tell you, because, of course, with what we do, Rob and I review a ton of sex toys, and sometimes it's just, there's such a playfulness and a hilarity when you're just trying to, I was like, wait a minute, now let's figure out how this one works before later on.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's play in of itself for us. We get to just goof around and we have fun with it, as well as obviously, you know, actually trying it out. But
right.
Or some of the sex furniture, you know, that we have. And it's just like, wait a minute, how can you use this, or how can you use it different? Or when somebody falls off the bed, again, it becomes hilarious and it is a lot of fun as long as no one's injured.
Well, that's right. And don't you agree that this is amazingly fun research? And I always want to, my fiance Brian is very happy to do research, so that, because I don't like to recommend things to my couples unless I know about them. And
right.
And the couples that I see know that, and I'm sure this is true in your work as well, that I'm a sexual cheerleader. You know, I know what a difference it can make to to be sexual and happy. And that's a pretty good segue into talking about an important aspect of your business, and that is sexy secrets behind business. Mm-hmm. And you say your romantic relationship and your sex life have a great impact on your business and your career, whether it's a conscious effort or not. And when your romantic relationship and your sex life are thriving, you'll have more confidence, more be more productive, and tap into more creativity and feel happier as a whole. So we're going to expand on this. I just want to say that I have a frustration that here in Washington State, if you're a sex therapist, you may not collect insurance. And I see a lot of people from Amazon and Microsoft and, you know, people that have really good insurance. And it's so backwards thinking because these people are so much more productive in their work if they have a happy relationship and sex life. So it's really backwards thinking, I think. But anyway, so my clients see me, and mostly they think it's a good investment after we've been working for a while. But anyway, no insurance.
Yeah.
Well, and that's one of the things that I would love to do. I would love to design a program to go into companies, you know, because we usually talk about, you know, business owners and people that have their own business or work together. But what a great difference this could do to those bigger companies, you know, to help people. And I know it's taboo. Oh, we're not supposed to talk about sex in the workplace or anything. Mm-hmm. But how amazing would their staff be if the company was helping them have a better sex life at home? Obviously not coming to their home or anything, but giving them the opportunity to have instructions of how to improve their sex life, how to improve the romance in their life. How happy would their employees be?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. And they are happy, and you've discovered lots of connections between I'm just getting a call interrupt, but I'll ignore it. I need to turn off my phone. it's pretty amazing the connections. Now, you Isabel Allende is a global bestseller with her many, many books, and she always starts a new book in January on a particular date. I don't recall which one, but she always starts it after she's made love to her husband.
Uh-huh.
And her creative, oh, yeah. Her creative juices are just bubbling up. And an acquaintance of mine, Bob Basso, he always did these laughter and play workshops because he found that people and insurance companies and all that would hire him because people were much more creative after they'd been laughing a while.
Yeah.
And you
it's
say
really
that too, enhanced creativity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing what can happen after you make love. We've actually seen just times where, let me go, because what I started to say was the more woo side that's a little harder to explain in practical terms, but on a practical side, we'll make love, and then maybe we'll do some marketing, or we'll respond to someone, that's a time that we'll go write or create something. Rob is a little better about that than I am as far as like immediately afterwards, because he's all pumped up and ready to go. And I'm like, okay, I sound like the guy now, and I'm like, oh, I'm just ready to go to sleep. I'm so relaxed in such a zen state. But one of the things that we do in regards to that also afterwards, after he and I are together, and we've taught so many people to do this, is to pay attention to those thoughts that might pop into your head. Rob actually gets visions at the point of orgasm. My information, if you will, that comes through from that is more of a cognitive thing usually. I don't normally see actual like pictures in my head, but the information and the ideas that can come through are phenomenal if you get quiet for a moment or two and pay attention. And it can be profound. You know, it can be this message or this idea. You're like, oh my gosh, I need to apply that.
Well, I've tracked myself, and I've found out that I am most creative within the 3 days after we make love now. So obviously we don't try to go longer than 3 days without making love to keep that creative.
Going.
But it seems that I'm more open to whatever comes. And it's amazing the ideas that are pour through my mind and through my body afterwards. And I attribute that to the sexual energy that Janelle and I create during our lovemaking. And it's just like a lightning rod attracting all these ideas that are out there.
The sexual energy. Yes, but you do, just to, I want to clarify something for myself.
Okay.
So that you do this, you pay attention to thoughts that come into your head, but that's after the orgasm.
The reason
I'm asking is that I find I have a lot of very high IQ people, you know, they have these, you know, they write software and so on. So their problem is they're too much in their heads. They need to get out of their head and into their body while they're actually having sex. But you're suggesting this after, you're in your body, you have the orgasm, and then after that, you pay attention.
It's different to you. Because it's different, because I am a person that I'm so in my head a lot of times. Mind you, I was a dancer I taught dance, you know, I danced my whole life, so I'm very connected to my body.
Yeah.
So I guess for me, it's probably not that difficult to, you know, shift over and be connected and be in my body. However, you know, I have a lot of, I loved doing my academic work in the past, and so all of that, I can very easily get so in my head. But when you are in that alternative state of consciousness during or after making love, and you've had a wonderful experience with your partner or by yourself, if that's the case, but it's a different place. It's that Zen state. It's that really, Osho used to call it the valley orgasm. It's that moment of, and you're just, it's an emptiness almost. And so you can allow some one or two different things that might pop into your head. It's not a whole long, engaged thinking process.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what might just show up and not question it. Just go, okay, there it was. Does that help explain it at all?
Yes, yes. But say a little bit more about the valley orgasm. I have, is this your term? I haven't heard it before.
Ah, wonderful. Rob Osho is your man. Do you want to talk about it?
Well, the valley orgasm, we all know about the physical orgasm that we have to where, you know, everything combines, you climax, you have those spasms and everything. But the valley orgasm is that peaceful place that falls right after, that you go into. It's just like, oh, it's not, your body's coming back down to its normal state. So the valley orgasm is driving you back to your normal state, but you're not quite there yet. You're still open to these amazing things that are going on in the universe, if you will, but your body is open to, like, oh, it's just, you know, it's like you're floating back down into your body after leaving it with the orgasm. And so that's why, you know, you're falling back down into the valley, and it's just that blissful place that we don't usually get into during anything else during the day.
And in that, when you're thinking of the mind and all those conscious thoughts, it's, you know, when we think of sometimes doing a meditation, and again, that's an alternative state of consciousness at some point. So it's that stepping into that. It's that allowing a different idea or a different experience or to come through.
So it's you're in a post-coital kind of haze where there's probably, physiologically, you're in an oxytocin, endorphin kind of soup, and kind of flow with it and go with it and enjoy it. And I think post-coital behavior shows quite a lot. The person who jumps out of bed and takes a shower, they don't want to just be there typically. They're maybe running away from some intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, in all our intimate relations, our sexual relations, I think after play, to me, is very important that we still continue on. It's not just, okay, the orgasms happened, we're done. You know, like you said, get up, take a shower, clean up, whatever. You know, to lay there and bask in that amazing energy that's all around you at that time.
And I want to clarify, just because I know that sometimes I do express it a little bit differently there. Often for me, it is kind of after we lay there for a little bit, then you go, you clean up, and you come back, and you're ready to go to sleep. But there's still that peaceful sense. There's still, a lot of those hormones are still going on, right? They're still there. It's not completely gone. And that's usually when the ideas, the different things come through for me. So it's a little different than the way it happens for Rob, but we're all different individuals. Again, it's just about going, okay, this is that time. I want to focus on this now. And then I can doze off, or usually we end up talking about it. Like, what did you get? What did you see? What, what information came through for you?
Yeah, that's great. It's after that sort of an intimate merging, it can be quite ecstatic to have that. And sometimes it's even hard to put it in words. But I think you must feel very blessed as a couple. I know I feel blessed to have this kind of high-level sexuality and lovemaking.
Oh, absolutely. It's been a life changer, actually, for us.
Because it wasn't always this way for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had our ups and downs. Mm-hmm. But once we started learning and growing and, you know, improving our relationship, man, the sex life said, hey, was knocking on the door. It's like, hey, let us in now, too. So.
Now, you two also believe that it's important for couples to keep dating each other even after marriage. By the way, I think so, too. I recommend date nights after marriage.
Absolutely.
Or commitment of any sort. So can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, I think
and also, how often do you think a couple...
Yeah, good question. That's an excellent one, isn't it? So for one thing, we have to have that, because when we are in a relationship, in a committed relationship, the hormones do change. You know, most people know at the beginning, you know, those great, amazing hormones are being released, and you are super excited, and you're like, oh, he's coming over to pick me up or whatever. But then you're together longer and longer, and the next thing you know, now you're like, oh, I just saw you, like, go take a shower and then get out and floss your teeth and put deodorant on or whatever. And it doesn't seem very sexy. You start to lose some of that attraction. And oftentimes, the closer we get to our partner on that emotional level, and though we may be very bonded emotionally, now we're such good friends that we don't feel maybe as sexually attracted to him or her. So getting out and doing things that are different and going and find, because when we say date night, this is not like always just go out and go to the same restaurant or let's go see a movie together where you can't really talk to each other during the movie. You could talk about it later. It could be interesting. That's true. But, you know, go do something different. Go do something fun and playful that can help get you a little bit out of your comfort zone, because now you're going to start to release these different hormones again, and it just shifts things. It changes things, and you always have something new and different going on in your relationship. I didn't answer how often.
The actual hormone that exists in abundance in early relationships is dopamine.
Yes.
And that's the hormone of arousal, and you get a lot of that along with testosterone early on. But dopamine needs novelty, and that's why it's so important to do these different things and maybe make love in different places and go on trips if you can. You know, it just makes such a difference to get more dopamine going.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, even the fact that, you know, we were talking about date nights and, you know, Janelle talked about doing things differently and experiencing something new, but even think about what you did when you were dating, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe the guy goes out or the woman, whoever, goes out and drives around and comes to the house and picks you up. So it's not just, hey, let's get ready, let's go. It's more of that dating sensation that's like, oh, knock on the door. You don't know what she's going to be wearing or what he's going to be wearing. And, it kind of brings back that feeling of that those first few dates. You know, maybe you get the butterflies again, things like that, or meet somewhere. That's always a good thing to do. Just say, hey, I'll meet you here. And when you go in and you're looking for your partner, you know, you kind of get that sensation of those first dates again, you know, like where is she or where is he? And that's fascinating. Now, as for how often we should do date nights, you know, that's kind of up to the couple, you know, and what's going on in their life. If you've got children and you have to, you know, think about a babysitter ahead of time and things like that, you know, maybe once a month, twice a month is all you can manage. But other couples that, you know, don't have those problems, or, and I don't want to say problems, but those issues of having to have child care, or, you know, life is really stressful and they don't have the money, they can do it more often. And even if you don't have the money, you can find date nights that don't cost anything. We often do this, and we do this with our children too. So sometimes we call it a family date night, but we'll set up our living room like a movie theater, and, you know, we'll make popcorn and put it in little bowls, and they can come, our youngest son can come up and buy candy. We'll have little tickets he can use for candy. And,
that's,
you know,
very creative. I like that.
And we'll sit in the back and maybe put our arms around each other and, you know, like we're at a real movie theater and stuff. And it just gives you something different than just plopping down on the couch, you know, because there's some thought put into it. And I think that's something that couples need to do. Put some thought into your date night. Don't just, like Janelle said, don't just go to dinner. Don't go to the same restaurant. You know, mix it up a little bit.
Well, and if you're going to say, you know, hey, on such and such date, you know, on the 15th or whatever, we're going to have date night, then you need to be making that plan so that you can build good, wonderful anticipation. And so you're not just like, oh, yeah, it's Friday night. Oh, we're going out. Oh, what are we doing? I don't know. And so wait to the last minute, because you want to build that wonderful anticipation, because, again, those hormones are going to start to kick in, and it just changes it all so that it's exciting and you can't wait to go, hopefully. That's the plan.
Well, exactly. I, you know, through the years, I've had some of my couples resist a little bit putting a date night on the calendar, because especially among men, it's changing a little bit, but the sex, for it to be any good at all, it needs to be spontaneous. And in our busy lives with TTFS and DINS syndromes, too tired for sex, and double income, no sex syndromes, you've got to plan, you've got to take out an actual calendar, and put down, I usually recommend, 2 date nights a month, and to take turns planning it. And that's often, and whoever plans the date night gets to initiate sex later. So,
well, and one thing that we like to do even is we'll have couples actually plan date nights with no expectation of anything to do with sex. Okay, who cares if you end up in the bed? Or, well, you'll end up in bed together probably, but, you know, having sex together. However, plan sex date nights so that you know that there's that whole entire plan. But, again, there should be, you know, either some planning involved, or one thing that we like to actually do is, and we do this. We actually just did it again because we have a day of 10 days in a row that we're together in some fashion sexually. And so that's a lot for some people, I know, but it depends on where your sex life is at, right?
Yeah.
Ours is in a place that we can do that. So, but we actually laid out all of our adult items on the bed the other night, and we wrote them all down on cards. And so because we had some new items, so we're going to add the things into our little deck of cards, if you will. And then we draw a card. We draw a card for whatever adult toy is going to be pulled out that night or used. And as well, we have another deck of cards that might have some other items. Maybe it's lingerie or a different lube, or we have the honey dust even, or the from Kama Sutra, or some things, you know. So even though it's planned, now there's some spontaneity because we don't really know what we're going to be doing. And you could do that with physicians. You could do all kinds of different things. You name it. So that's one of the things that we redo every so often, and we like to recommend to other people to do as well.
No, it's true. I mean, you plan a night out on the town. You put that down. You're meeting up with each other and maybe another couple. And within that plan, you can have lots of spontaneity. So I really love your drawing a card and picking a toy and maybe the honey dust. Honey dust is fun. I haven't thought about that for a while, but the Kama Sutra honey dust is good. You can.
Oh, we love that.
Well, another important piece here is, you know, if something happens and you can't make your date night, you know, like I said, if you have children and one of them gets sick or something to that nature, and you really can't go on your date night, don't just blow it off. Reschedule it.
Do it that night.
Say, okay, in two more nights, we'll have a free night. Let's do it then. But don't just blow it off and say, okay, we'll just, you know, skip this one, because you get in the habit when you do that. It's like, oh, something else came up more important, and that nothing else should be important. Obviously, your kids being sick or something of that nature is important enough to do that, but you want to reschedule as soon as possible.
That's a very good point, Dr. Rob. Very good point. So do you believe a couple's relationship should come first before everything else? Before their individuality, before their work? Talk about that.
Yeah, I think it's very, very, very important. Before work, especially, oh my gosh, especially as entrepreneurs, and this goes really for everyone, but Rob and I have been entrepreneurs since we were teenagers, so it's been a long, long time. We know more about that technically than working for other people, I guess. But we can't let our business life rule our relationship, because if we do that, or if we treat our clients better, it's like, oh, I got to take care of this client, and we're not, you know, maybe we'll, in that example of rescheduling something, well, I've got to reschedule George over here, but then we blow off the date night and we don't reschedule it, or we're late, we show up late for our partner instead of, you know, we would never do that for a client. You know, it doesn't make sense. It's like, you can't do that. The relationship has to come first. When you have that great foundation of an amazing relationship, that supports everything else that you do, as well as supporting you still in being who you are as an individual. So that one is kind of a twofold as far as that goes, because you have to still be you, because if you lose who you are and you're just the other half of the couple, well, you're not even necessarily the person that he or she fell in love with. So you have to maintain your individuality, each of you do, so that you have the couplehood as well. And then you have that ability to bring in some different things and have great and interesting conversations and mysterious pieces about you still, because you still have that piece.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go ahead.
No, I think you should, you know, treat your relationship as like your third entity or part of yourself. You know, you have your individual entity, but you have your relationship too, you know, and sometimes we have to make decisions from the relationship standpoint, you know, if we're going to go on vacation or something like that. But if you're out at the store, you need to make a decision yourself, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, well, let me call my partner and see what we're going to have for dinner tonight. No, make a decision. Pick something up. They don't like it, too bad, you know. there's certain things that we have to look at from a relationship standpoint and other things that we have to look at from an individual standpoint, and you just have to kind of feel out which ones of those work in your relationship.
And I want to say here, too, I know we've mentioned kids because we still have one smaller child still at home. The others are grown. But, you know, you can't allow that to kind of be that I don't want to say that becomes crutch, because it's not that, and it's different than that. But that, well, we can't go out because or we can't the kids don't want to do this, or, ooh, they don't like to see us hug or kiss. And you have to be so close together. You are the power center. You know, that relationship, again, I go back to it, it's the foundation. It teaches your kids how to be in the world and how to treat and respect other people. And for that matter, when you stand together as a strong couple and have a great relationship, guess what? Your neighbors will see that. You know, I mean, it feeds out. Your coworkers actually see it. Don't bash your partner to your girlfriends or the guys or whatever. Don't do that, because it doesn't help, and it feeds negativity. And so when we have that great relationship and we're happy of that and proud of that, that's the pebble in the pond. It feeds out. It ripples out that beautiful energy, and it does affect everyone and everything else around us.
Yes, I'm sure you have friends who love to be around the two of you, because you're a happy couple. Isn't it kind of nerve-wracking when you find yourself with negative people who are, you know, carping and being annoying with each other and all of that? It's So the positive energy can emanate, and I think you have to. I think sometimes people who are more mature have a better chance at more intimacy because if you want to have a successful relationship, it will take time, and you may just have to learn something about yourself
mm-hmm.
and how to be yourself and how to hold on to yourself simultaneously and with being in a relationship. And Dr. David Snarch talks about this as in his wonderful book, Passionate Marriage, that it's differentiation, which involves learning to balance your individuality, that it would be your separateness, with your emotional connection to someone else, the mm-hmm. togetherness. But the best intimacy probably happens when there is that differentiation.
Yeah, because that's where that attraction still comes back in, when there is mm-hmm. some mystery around your partner, or even something, it depends on the individual and the couple, but we really disagree on something, and Rob and I have had some presidential debates lately.
Yeah, who hasn't?
Yeah. So, you know, because we actually, we're both, you know, we love our country, we love the people, I say that, I really consider myself a global citizen, but, you know, we do stand differently. I support Hillary, he supports Bernie, and so we've had amazing conversations from our various perspectives, right? And mm-hmm. we honor each other enough, but it becomes like, it's kind of sexy, too. We get excited about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it sparks conversation, which is sexy. I mean, I consider a great conversation is foreplay. There's no way around mm-hmm. it between partners. But when we disagree and we at least hear our partner, mm-hmm. and it's not just we shut them down like, no, they've got a different opinion than me, so they're wrong. When we give up that need that we have to be right and we just truly listen to our partner, oh, my God, that's sexy. I mean, when Janelle listens to me, even if she doesn't agree with me, you know, and she'll listen to me and, you know, maybe question me on things, it's so sexy. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the brain and the genitals are very much connected.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I suppose that's one reason why people sometimes have great makeup sex. I don't think it's you from the way you've described it, but physiologically you're breathing more and your hormones are going more if you're fighting. And
uh-huh.
I don't think it's the best way to have sex at all, but I do know people that have it, you know, where they've got all worked up and then they have hot sex because it's makeup sex. Mostly men like that more than women, though, because women usually take, I'm generalizing to a degree, but women take a little longer to calm down after a fight.
Yeah, as I say, I'm on that that side of that. It's like, no, there won't be makeup sex because I would be still mad for a little while, though. It's been so, Rob and I just don't have big fights anymore because we've learned how to just say, wait a minute, I completely don't agree with you right now. However, I really want to see it from your perspective. I want to know why you feel that way. And I may not change my mind. I may still be standing firm where I was a while ago. But I still want to know, I love him, and I want to know why he thinks that. And this is a tool that you can use with people that you don't necessarily love, per se. It could be a coworker. It could be your kids, which we hope you love them, of course. But why? What is that? I want to see it from your perspective. When you do that, you open yourself up to amazing new creative, you know, possibilities.
And that's a big point in your sexy secrets behind business.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Do you believe a couple's relationship should come first before everything else, before their individuality, before their work?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it really, mm-hmm. I don't want to say before the individuality, but before your work, it should.
Definitely before your work. I think the individuality and the relationship should take on equal parts, because you don't want, like we said earlier, you don't want to lose yourself. You want to be
right.
that same, you know, person that your partner fell in love with, but yet you have that third wheel, if you will, in there, and that's your relationship, and you've got to foster it too. You can't just all worry only about yourself, because
right.
then, you know, the relationship gets neglected, and that's when we lose touch with each other. So I think they have to be equal in that sense.
Yes, and then in developing a strong romantic relationship and all the behaviors that surround it, that really can feed into your work relationships. And you talk about this, and so in other words, how can honoring and respecting and showing love to your sweetheart help you develop good work relationships? I think that's a really important question that you deal with in your work a lot. So,
well, I think that kind of goes back to even just what we were just talking about there, is that that opportunity, you can kind of practice that with your spouse, but with your partner. But saying, I don't agree with you, but wait a minute, let's talk. I want to hear your stance on it. I want to know what you think about this. Why do you, and when you say why, always be careful with that word, because that's kind of an accusatory word. Why do you think that? So, you know,
yes.
Why? What are your feelings around that? Tell me more. I want to hear more. Because it does. It opens you up to these new possibilities. And really, the conversation can go way, you know, expand greatly into different areas. And the potentiality of new things is just freaking amazing. But then when you learn how to do that with your partner and you go, wait a minute, this works, and I can trust him or her, you'll start to learn how to do that with other people. And you could do it in reverse.
But. Well, and also when you bring this into the work, and just, you know, obviously there's no romantic intuitions in there or anything, but you can see, because I've been in management positions before, and where I might not agree with somebody, but I ask them why, and you can see their face light up that you care what mm-hmm. they think about. And what a great way to foster the business relationship when you care what other people think. You don't have to agree with them, but to care enough to go, okay, give me some more information. I want to hear, I want to try to understand it through your eyes, why you think this would be beneficial. And people love that. We all love that. We all mm-hmm. want to be heard, and we don't want to just be a cog in the wheel. And when you do that in your business too, man, you're going to get people that are going to support you full-heartedly.
You know, it reflects the difference how you compare IQ with EQ, emotional intelligence. And if somebody's high in emotional intelligence, which clearly you are, clearly I am, clearly my fiancé is, then you know yourself very well, you know your feelings, you can talk about them. It makes you a very good manager in business, because mm-hmm. you know your own feelings and you can intuit another's feelings. So they'll say that IQ might get you hired, but EQ will get you promoted.
Yeah, absolutely. And it keeps your clients, it keeps your customers, or the company's customers, however the case may be. Maybe you're a school teacher and your students are going to thrive. So it's just amazing. And when we use that with our children, that our children thrive. They become more confident little creatures and grow into much more confident adults. So it's so powerful. And when you do that with your partner, you feel safe. You feel more confident. And when that safety and that confidence is at home, then you automatically are going to feel more, you know, more safe, safer, and more confident out in the world in general, as well as, of course, within your work.
Within your work. Yes, I think it spills out. I have felt it, too. I was widowed a number of years ago, suddenly and unexpectedly, and it was such a great marriage. It was just a shattering experience, because he was so young and we didn't expect his death. But I knew I wanted to be in another relationship, eventually, but it took me 10 years to find mm-hmm. Brian, and I found him through Match.com. And so that was 5.5 years ago, and we've been engaged for almost 2 years. And but the point I want to make is that when you have a really good relationship that's good in terms of the commitment and the intimacy and the passion, the triangular theory of love that Robert Sternberg put out years ago, he was out of Yale, you know, then you it permeates mm-hmm. all kinds of things. I actually, since knowing Brian, and he helped me with my website, which made a big difference, and that was about 3 years ago, maybe more now. So, but it helps, it informs my work. I'm a better couples counselor and individual too, because I have mm-hmm. this really exciting relationship, and sexually, the emotional intimacy as well as the physical intimacy. I've got it going on, and it just makes me a better therapist, and I'm very grateful for that. And I think it makes you too a better.
Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, it informs.
A client of ours even said to us, a while back, and he does, he does? But he's in banking, basically, not like just at the bank, but a lot of investments and a big money involved, right? A lot of money coming through that, both to him to help his clients make more money. So he's not a financial advisor, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, whatever. I can't even tell you right now. I don't know why I can't tell you what he does, but, his sexual relationship with his wife, he has seen time and time again, and that's what he's told us. He's like, oh, my gosh, you guys, because of this and because of this great experience, and they had a good sex life to begin with, but because of making it even better and implementing the things that we've taught to them, he has seen time and time again big accounts come his way, success just time again. And I know that's the materialistic piece of it, but he has been so much more successful financially in his work, and then as well as just obviously just taking care of those clients. It just has this very fascinating impact on us that sometimes can be very practical, and other times it goes beyond that. You know, it taps into those universal laws or something that we can't understand, and it's kind of magic in a way. It's like, wow, how did it even happen? And it's just profound.
Yeah, and I mean, just go out sometime and look at the couples around, and you can almost pick out the ones that have the best or great sex lives. I mean, there's just something about them. There's a glow to them. There's, you know, they're touching each other. There's chemistry. There's magic between them, and you can see it. And it makes so sense to me that would emanate out into everything we do. When we have that great feeling, when you're in love and in a great sexual relationship, you know, you can conquer the world.
Absolutely. And not only that, but I feel especially for seniors like myself and Brian, you know, it's like a fountain of youth.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because it's having ongoing really hot sex is so good for your health. There's a lot of research to back that up. And so, you know, you can tell, just to Rob your point, you can look at people. I mean, I look at older people with my gerontologist hat on, and, you know, I can see, like, I can see older women who have clearly folded up their tents.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and they look, frankly, they look a little older because of it.
Yes.
There isn't that sort of joy or, yeah, coming from their faces. And mm-hmm. and I'm all for people remaining sexual as they age. It's just so good for you. But the problem many older women have, of course, is that they don't have access to a partner.
Mm-hmm. But you can experience that. You can experience self-pleasure and still have amazing joy and be in a very different place. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought this up, Janelle, because when I speak to senior centers, and I do from time to time, on the display table after the lecture will be a lot of sex toys, but I will have talked about them. And one can bring, one, you know, can play with the sex toys. And I also say to older women, you know, you need, if you don't have a partner and you're not having regular intercourse, you need to be using this dildo inside your vagina because, and then contract on it because it keeps the vaginal muscles, the PC muscles flexible. And so, yeah, self-pleasure is really important. And you deal with that. Talk a little bit about that in the last few minutes we have for this show. And then I will say while we're paused that clearly we did not get to merging sexuality and spirituality, but that's why we have a part two on the 15th of March. Yeah. But talk about self-pleasure and how you deal with individuals in your work.
Well, you know, one thing with the self-pleasure I think is so vital is that you can experience that on your own. So if you don't have a partner, it is a huge piece. But I also want to point out, and Rob, you and I talk about this so often, we're such big advocates of couples understanding this, because oftentimes one person is not in the mood, right? And the other person is. And I always joke and call Rob Mr. Frisky because his sex drive is a lot higher than mine. So when that may be the case, one could do self-pleasure, or you can be with him or her either while they're self-pleasuring or just take care of them and pleasure them. So there's so many things that people need to understand, that sex and lovemaking are so, it's that terminology, the idea, the definition of what it is so much bigger than what people think it is. And, you know, having that, we are making love to ourselves, to with our partner when we have one, and that's beautiful, and it's vital because it's not just a physical act. It really does touch your soul. And hopefully we'll talk more about that in the 15th.
Well, and you don't want to get out of practice.
And we will. And we will. You know, the whole spiritual aspect, the tantra aspect. We'll talk about that. Yeah. What were you going to say, Rob?
I was just saying you don't want to get out of practice either. I mean, even for the older people you were talking about earlier, they might finally get a partner or have a partner show up. They don't want to be out of practice. They want to be ready to go.
Well, that's right. That's why I suggest masturbation between relationships, including for the guys that feel like their erections are not so reliable. And so, of course, we now have Viagra and Cialis, et cetera, to help with that. But I think it's important for guys to know that they can masturbate, but and the erection might fade, and in fact I'll tell them as a homework assignment, let it go down, and then realize that you can bring it up again.
Exactly. And the thing of it is, if it fades, there are other things that you can do and enjoy pleasure. It doesn't have to be just straightly intercourse or climax. Right. There are beautiful ways to experience lovemaking without, again, that thought of, ooh, it's only this. This is what we have to do if we're going to have sex. Right?
No, that's very, very true. I have plenty of sensate focus exercises. You know, we've come to the end. And I look forward, thank you so much, and I'm going to do a write-up on this, and we'll talk some more. Next time, we'll talk about sexuality and spirituality. Thank you so much, Rob and Janelle.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.